Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, North Bay Stocks and Jacks, I'm Tom Howell. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 875, NASDAQ Futures down 87. Still leaking a little bit today, probably a little bit of a hangover from this family office that seems to went down, and everybody's still trying to find out what took place there. We'll talk a little more about that later in the show. We also have NCAA action last night. We got all kinds of stuff to talk about today. We also have the ladies should be calling in this morning, Audrey and Nancy, talking about real estate and mortgages, because obviously that's been a big topic, and we have not covered that in a while. So as soon as they call in, we'll get them on. I have this article here, and I don't think the article's all that good, but you wonder, talk about people getting themselves involved. A CNBC article here, it's talking about how genius Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley were by selling the stock out because they knew these guys were in trouble sooner than everybody else. And boy, you kind of wonder if that's inside information, but maybe we'll talk about that later with Jeff or somebody later in the show. But do we have the ladies? It appears we do not. But that was, it's becoming a problem for the market, this thing this morning. Nobody seems to know.
Yep, Nancy's on the line.
Nancy is on the line. Audrey keeps getting a busy signal, it appears, you guys, so I don't know what that means. Is there another line she should call in?
I think we're going to call her.
That would be even better. Nancy, are you here?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you? Good morning. Good morning. Nice to hear you. Since you ditched me the last two or three times, you're supposed to come out for breakfast and stuff with us.
Well, you know, when you party the night before, this is what happens.
Yeah. Well, I hear you ladies have been having a good time. Did Audrey tell you about the place we went Saturday night? We're going to have to try that.
Yes, she did. That sounds very interesting.
The land that time forgot. And yet there was a place in the middle of whatever. So I suppose there's still places in the middle of Detroit, too. Hey, I want to talk to you ladies regarding... What is going on? We haven't had you on in a while talking about real estate. There's been so much other crazy stuff to talk about. But what exactly is going on, you know, price-wise and everything regarding... I mean, Chicago allegedly lost 1.3% of their population last year. What has that done to the market, suburbs versus city? Are the people leaving for burbs? Are they leaving out of state? Both? Is it causing... a lot of empties one place and can't find a place somewhere else. I mean, what's going on?
The inventory is extremely low. Inventory means homes for sale.
Everywhere, or even in the city? Or you guys don't do as much in the city, but...
I have not had anything in the city as of late. I don't know about Audrey. Selling homes in the city, people coming to the suburbs and into Indiana, has been big. I have never had any home sales in Indiana as I have of late.
Wow. How far in? Are people still planning on commuting someday back to Chicago, or are they just working from home in Indiana?
They're all planning on commuting back. I don't know how the roads are going to take it. You know, the infrastructure from Indiana to here is going to be tested. However, if that's what people are choosing to do, you know, they're all just rebelling. They all just feel the state is in poor shape, and that going to Indiana, that they will be better off, and then they're just going to be driving back in.
The Well, they got, they're ready for him on the Skyway. They got the tolls up to 580.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, they just went
at
up
all.
To... Yeah, how scary is that? The, yeah, I went by there the other day, and I couldn't believe it was 580. So I'm trying to find Audrey's number here, which of course I have. But since everybody's got phone lines, everybody's got their phones now. Nobody remembers anybody's phones. I can remember every phone number that I used to call for, like guys that played basketball when I was in high school. And I can't remember anybody's phone number today because it's on your phone.
Right, you're not used to dialing anymore. You're just used to pulling up a name.
Oh, I know. It's just it's crazy. So what in Indiana, are the prices going up or are they just steady?
The prices in Indiana, really, for it, what I have seen, homes are about actually selling for $80,000 more than what you would pay for a home here.
Really?
A comparable home. So I don't see the big attraction to moving across the state line. But if people have fear of the real estate taxes and Illinois raising their state taxes, I'm not saying it's unfounded, but none of us know what the future holds. I mean, how do we know Indiana won't need more roads and their taxes are going to
go up? That is absolutely true, but I mean, it's pretty much, let me see if I can dig up my debt clock here for Illinois, but I mean, it's pretty much obvious that, I mean, if you think Audrey, we have you?
You have me.
We've had Nancy for a while. We've been talking about you.
I was listening.
Oh, no, we weren't talking about you. We're talking about Indiana.
I knew about it.
Yes, Indiana and in Illinois. She says the prices have gone up over there. It is hard to figure out exactly where you want to land here, because I did some work. I mean, Audrey knows I do this crazy stuff all the time, Nancy. We actually went from, there was a study of state to state on taxes, and everybody's convinced that, you know, if you go to like the Wyoming or someplace, that your taxes are way better than they are here, right? Well, it turns out your property taxes and other stuff are, but the death tax in Wyoming is such that it's actually one of the highest states in the country if you die there.
Wyoming's not really on my list to go there.
Well, but I'm saying people think that that's where you want to go, Wyoming and Idaho, and those places to get away from everything. And I'm looking at the in-state.
Of course, when you're dead, do you care?
Well, you're the people who, if you have any kids, I guess they care. Debt per citizen in Illinois is $13,000. I'm looking at the Illinois debtclock, .org. Wow, Illinois's got 2 million unemployed out of 12 million population. That's a lot. A million seven food stamp recipients.
Why are you shocked about that?
Well, I don't know, because I just looked at it. You always get shocked. I mean, so 13,000 per person in Illinois. Let's see what it is in Indiana. Debt per citizen in Indiana is only 6,000, so it's about half as much.
Indiana's a steal all the way, pretty much all the way around.
Nancy was saying the prices are higher.
There's no reason, but there's too many uncertainties in Illinois. I mean, in basically, the fact that the state is just such poorly run, why would you stay here if you don't have to?
Well, I think that this debt per citizen, just saying here, I mean, whenever you look at numbers, you always got to ask yourself the question. I'm going to say that this debt per citizen is official debt, and it doesn't count unfunded pensions.
It doesn't matter, then.
Well, if it doesn't, then it doesn't matter. But Nancy was saying that the prices in Indiana have gone way up.
They're skyrocketed. She's absolutely right. Everybody's fleeing Illinois. So Wisconsin, Indiana, they're all Florida, Arizona, they're all benefiting from the fabulous governmental policies in Illinois.
Well, yeah, it's a tough. So what is, and the people, does anybody know what the downtown market's like? I mean, These big rental
people are taking a lot of losses. Have been taking a lot of losses on property down there just to get out, sitting where it is. They just don't want to deal with it. They'd rather be in the suburbs. If they have to stay in Illinois, most of them are coming to the suburbs. Nobody wants to be on a lockdown in a high rise.
Yeah, it is kind of tough.
I've had stories, horror stories. Clients tell me that they're waiting for an elevator for 40 minutes to go to work to get down because you're going to have so many people, or they don't have a balcony. You're trapped in your house for months. So everybody wants a yard, wants some space, and nobody wants to be locked up.
I ran into somebody who just, when we locked down, we got out of total lockdown like a few months ago, and some guy I met says to me, actually I knew him from the trading floor, he says, yeah, I just got divorced and moved back downtown in like a studio without a balcony. It's a good thing I didn't have the balcony or I would have jumped off it. It was that bad. Because nobody went out. You couldn't go down the elevator. It was pretty bad. So what do you make of, the houses that people are buying right now? What is the anticipation in terms of property taxes? I mean, do people even talk about it right now, obviously, you sell the home, Nancy finds the mortgage for somebody, and people sit down and they say, you know, here are the taxes, here's what you can afford. I guess this is more of a question for Nancy. Are the mortgage people, I won't say are they smart enough, but are they assuming that 2 years from now the taxes are going to be up, or they just look at today's taxes and roll with the salary this year?
No, you have to roll with what it is now. I mean, fortune telling nobody knows what's going to happen, so fortune telling just doesn't work. However, with these low rates, I mean, people could have, like, the average person, I'd say the principal and interest is somewhere around $1,000. And the part that people are having a hard time with is that their taxes they're figuring $600, $650, $700, and then, let's say, just $100 a month for homeowners insurance. Well, when you look at it, when you're going to pay $700 or $800 in just those two things and then $1,000 against your mortgage payment, people are saying, oh, my God. And in Indiana, I think it's supposed to be a state law that I think it's 1% of what you paid for your home. So, I mean, there's just a huge difference there.
Well, there's people here in Chicago that are paying like an awful lot more than that, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. The average home in Illinois, I mean, you're paying at least $600-$700 a month in real estate taxes.
Let's see, how many, or Audrey, if I'll ask you that because you've got the floor here. How many pockets are there in Illinois? I mean, Audrey has told me about, like, Park Forest and Flossmoor and places like that where they've lost some businesses or they've lost some shopping centers and the taxes are unconscionable, you know, to where somebody with a $56,000 house is paying like $6,000 or something. I mean, how many pockets like that are there in Illinois? Is it just a couple I just mentioned, or are there more than that? Do any of you guys know?
You know what? It seems to depend. It doesn't. You know, it seems like all some of the just these poorer areas have such high tax rates. And I don't know, honestly, to say how many aren't. But I just had learned that through experience of, selling homes and buying homes for clients in these areas that I thought, wow, I'm like, how could you get ahead if your taxes are so much more than your mortgage payment? And if you could only afford a $50,000 house, you got to tack another $500 a month on top of it. That's a lot of money, when you're dealing with, a mortgage, small priced house. I mean, how do people save money? How do they get ahead? I don't quite know. How these suburbs can function, who studied the tax rates, but I think it's part of what's depressing the economy is people who have so little disposable income afterwards.
Well, I've had debates with people here that think the world is straight, right? And, I guess I'm not going to say that the world isn't all that straight, but I could, being a Southsider. But they talk about, you know, their house, the value hasn't gone up, but the taxes have gone up, and finally I'll say, you know, don't you guys get it? That your village or whoever the hell it is figures out how much they feel like spending and they divide it by the amount of houses and that's your bill. How they get there through it, whether it's, it's how much your house is worth or the multiplier or something else, doesn't matter. They're going to get you out of it somehow. So don't think for a second that because your house went down in value that your taxes are going to go down. Because they're just
in the middle of the big recession. Illinois made a show of it when they got reduced for like a year. And ever since then, they've been flying up because now they change how they do the multiplier. You know, so, it's all just smoke and mirrors. And the taxes are, they just figured out a way to boost them enormously anyway.
Well, Nancy, I talk all the time, you know, too much about when my stepfather and mother bought the first bungalow in 102nd Place, right? It was 1958, and they buy the place for like $18,000, and they, you know, my mom, of course, had the money down. My stepfather, even though he made good money, didn't have anything. Typical guy. So they put down 20%, and he's got, you know, good job, GI Bill, and blah, 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 and they buy the place. And, of course, anybody knows in the late 50s, 60s, you know, the economy was fine. We got a kind of a raise every year and a little bit of inflation, and everybody was happy. But, I mean, I can't imagine in those days, you know, them walking into, they actually got the mortgage at Concordia. Remember that name? So they walk in, and I can't imagine them at Concordia saying, this is never going to work. Don't you understand that in 3 years your taxes are going to be double and you're liable to be unemployed? Yet now that is a significant possibility. Maybe not the unemployed part, but I mean the person you're talking about with the $1,000 a month mortgage and the $500 a month taxes, I mean that could easily be, if mortgage rates go back to 5 or 6 and the taxes double, which I think they're going to. I mean, who are you going to sell the house to, I guess is my question. Does that even come into this discussion at all?
Well, I think the whole thing is people are going to have to live somewhere. So you may up or you lower your expectations, but people, it's going to be, we could possibly the same thing that happened in the recession. The people who are moving up and moving down wanted the same property to get by. You know, so the people who normally would, instead of buying the $300,000 house, were buying the $175,000 house.
Well, the issue comes down to, you know, who are you going to sell it to? I mean, I don't know what, I mean, downtown here, I mean, Nancy, one of Audrey and my friends, he was in his near north, well, he still lives there, in the River North area, and they haven't really had a tax increase in like a while. So we're driving home in the car, I'm giving him a lift, and he opens up this tax thing, and his taxes are up like, you know, 20%. Well, it hadn't been redone in a while. So he's up like 20 or 25%, and I said, "How do you feel like
that's a real number downtown?"
Yeah, well, they must have had a good lawyer in the area or something because they hadn't gone up for a while. So he goes up. So I said, "How does it feel that the price of your house just dropped 10%?" I mean, but that's the truth, unfortunately, right? I mean, people can only pay what they can pay, and I don't. Okay. Go ahead, Nance.
Well, it is correct. I mean, like. I just sat someone down and said, okay, you know, you're paying like $1,200. He was required to pay $1,100 a month for his principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And he says, well, I pay $300 extra to try and get ahead and get my mortgage, you know, paid off, because that's the American dream, right? You own your own home and debt free.
Oh, yeah.
And, they're looking for something new, and I said, "Do you, in your scenario that you gave me, do you realize your payment will go from, you know, this $1,000 plus $300 extra you pay, so $1,300 to $2,100? How do you feel about that?" And he goes, "Well, I couldn't afford that." So they're going to have to keep on dropping down. And so he said, "Well, how far do I have to go?" And I said, "Well, for every $20,000 that you drop, your mortgage payment is going to drop $90.
Wow.
But your mortgage payment isn't the issue here. It's the tax payment. You have to make sure that your taxes are going to stay below. You know, you're going to go from whatever you're paying now, I think it's paying like $500. I said, you're going to go to $650, $700, $750 with the numbers that you're talking about.
That's too high for most people.
That's going to go up. So he couldn't believe it. Putting $20,000 more down in cash is only going to equate to $90 a month in a payment.
I think what's happening in the economy, I think we need to have a lot of things, but we need to have an obligatory economics 101 course for a lot of people, because at least they'll know what their government's doing to them a little better than they do. I mean, these numbers just fly around. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, unless that's your life, like it is yours and Audrey's and to a certain extent mine, You don't put two and two together on this stuff. It's hard to. What are the I still see buildings being built downtown here, but they don't seem like they're in any kind of rush to finish them. I mean, do they really need more buildings down here? I mean, what is your estimation on and how soon the city has to come back before maybe it doesn't come back. I mean, are we reaching a stage where downtown you got to worry about it?
Oh, I think you've already reached that stage, personally. I'm not sure how Nancy feels. I think that if you're not up and running by the end of this year, I think that business people are just going to look elsewhere.
Well, because we're starting to get some people coming back. I mean, some people who were coming back one day a week are now coming back two. At the end of the month, June 1st, I'm hearing about a lot of restaurants and bars opening up again. I don't know, first month's not going to be so hot, but, I mean, people say...
Well, you open them, you can't close them again. If you can't close them, then people are just going to throw the towel and let it go elsewhere. It's more business friendly. You can't keep jerking people around forever, because I just don't see... I've said that it's not going to help to keep everything closed.
No, I don't think
everybody's unemployed and starving to death. Does it matter if you're worried about catching COVID?
Well, what, Nance, how close are people when they, I mean, you know, I've heard really good stories that you find ways to put people in homes that maybe other people can't. You have an imagination about you. It doesn't surprise me, but how close, I use the term, we used to do sensitivity analysis when I was in, that was my job at Pullman and other places, where if most people that you get into a house, what's the edge there? I mean, if it's one hospital bill, is it the taxes go up 25%? I mean, how close are they to the edge in their first year where they're going to be in trouble? Are they real close, or do they have some, what kind of padding should you say do you guys leave, or is it none?
Well, I always tell the person I bring it down to a dollar, and I tell them what the rule of thumb is: when before your feet hit the ground in the morning, before they get out of bed, you should be committed no more than like 28 cents out of your dollar to just your principal, interest, mortgage, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. Okay, and then your total debt out of that dollar should be no more than about 36, 37 cents, so that you have two-thirds of your money left over for all these things you're talking about.
Well, how do
you go in? That's the ideal situation. I've had people who's out of a dollar before, you know, their total debt income, before they just everything they're committed to pay on minimum payments and their principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, at 62, 64 cents. And I said, so you know how you like to golf? You're going to be able to putt across your family room.
Yeah, pretty much.
Chip and turn the couch so that the ball can hit into the sofa. Is that what you want? And it's amazing. Some people just say yes, they can live on 30 cents.
Well, the American dream is they think they're going to be, 2 years from now, they're going to be doing a lot better.
Correct, and people will tell me that. They'll say, well, I'm getting this promotion in May that's going to make this amount of money or whatever. Then you take those numbers and you still bring it down to the dollar.
Well, like I said, my parents bought the house. I'm going to guess by 1962, my stepfather kept getting raises, and I'll bet that the mortgage was a half of one paycheck inside of 4 or 5 years. I mean, you know, that's the America we all look at. We still think it is, but I'm not so sure it is anymore.
I'm not so sure it is anymore either. And then I'm not sure that people there's so much online and on the internet that people read that they believe, and you can't get them to, you know, if it's on the internet, it's got to be true. So if they have that attitude, it's very difficult to get through to them. But there are people, if they are really stuck, if I think it's wrong, I don't do it.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen these numbers, Nancy and Audrey. I don't believe these median income numbers on this thing. I think they're a little light. But let's say the median income now is, let's say, $37,000. In 2000, it was $31,000. The median new home now is $326,000, and in 2000, it was $162,000. So that's the battle you're fighting, in addition to the taxes being up.
That's why two people have to work in a family, usually.
Yeah, and then now you've got child care expenses and other stuff that comes out the bottom. Unless you just want to let them run wild.
Yeah, most people are cutting life very, very close, I think. That's what I see, and Nancy sees that all the time, too. And it's But on the other hand, I mean, for people, I mean, nowadays, if you could still get a house for 3%, rent is off the charts in the suburbs. I mean, you're paying double to rent something what a mortgage payment is normally, Nancy, don't you think, from what we've been seeing?
I agree. Yeah, no, I agree. I believe it's very difficult all the way around the board. And COVID has had so many, besides the, you know, physical end of COVID, the mental end of COVID, with all the stress of people not knowing if they're going to be employed, not employed. People are making decisions that, well, I can work from home now. I've been doing it for 2 years. No problem. Like we just discussed, if they have to come back to downtown, how's that going to work for them?
What about their poor dogs? They're used to having them be there all day.
Well,
yeah, dog walking business will boom.
Hey, how about you guys giving us a shameless plug? Next time we have you on, we'll have you on for the whole hour, but give us a shameless plug. How do we find you guys in full names?
Audrey Johnson, and you can reach me either AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or give me a call at 708-846-6494.
Nance?
My name is Nancy Long Graham. I'm at nancygraham@goatmc.com. Or you can just give me a call at 708-341-9601.
And I'm going to say these two ladies are the best. If you don't use them, you're leaving something on the table, shall we say. Take care. I'll see you guys. Maybe I'll see you this weekend, Nance. You know, you never know. Just you guys.
We're going to call her Easter eggs on Friday.
Oh, God. Okay. But just don't talk about me too much if I'm not there. Just
oh,
saying.
Baby. Okay.
SP Futures down 10. NASDAQ Futures down 83. Be right back. Joel and Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 7 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right
now. Right now. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Matt Weber on the board. SP futures down 11.50 now. NASDAQ futures down 84. We're having trouble shaking off this thing with this family office. Plus, we got some rising rates this morning, too. It's driving even the gold and silver prices down. This is getting kind of weird. I mean, I'm really surprised the way these things are moving. But then again, the market always surprises everybody, including me. Dow futures down 29. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 90. That's 0.6%. We got the FTSE up 5. Call that flat. CAC around up 27.4%. Not so sure why those guys are raising here, but they are. Nikkei up 48.1%. They've been all over the place. That's actually an inside day for them. Nomura stock is continuing to go down after yesterday's tumble because of this family office place. Shanghai up 21.6%. Hang Seng up 239.8%. Just a way of review. Yesterday, the Dow was up 98. S&P was down 3, and the NASDAQ was down 79. Bonds, 1.76, which I think is the highest. Last time we got to 1.74 or 1.76. 6 months still is only like 0.5%, so, or 0.3%, so the yield curve is just steepening. It's not, in the near terms, they're not going anywhere. Of course, the Fed's pouring money out every day, they're not going to. But, the Bund minus 0.26, that's up 5 basis points. That's a lot. I mean, these guys were minus 0.34 the other day, so they're moving up real fast. Japan, however, is only up 0.1 to 0.08. because they've got no more problems over there. Oil down $1.06 to $60.50. Brent down 95 cents, $64.03. Natural gas up a penny, $2.67. RBOB down 2 cents, $2.97. Gold is down $25 to $16.89. Someplace, somewhere, I mean, I honestly believe this. Of course, it hasn't worked out so well so far. That one of these days, the inflation, as my brother said, the inflation in like the tips, the inflation and anticipation bonds are higher than they've been in ages. So I've got to believe one of these days these gold and silver are going to turn around here, but I thought that was going to be yesterday, and it's not. Silver down 47 cents, 24.30. Copper down 4 cents, 3.98. Crypto, Bitcoin's up at 1,300 to 59,001. What do you guys got for traffic, weather, sports?
Good morning. It is 36 minutes past the hour. For traffic, we've got a good start this morning. Clear roads, no accidents. Weather in Chicago, it is cloudy, sunny, with a high of 64, maybe a little light rain towards the evening. In Phoenix, sunny with a high of 86. No cloud in the sky. For sports, the Bulls lost to the Warriors last night, 116 to 102. The Blackhawks didn't play. And in the NCAA, Houston beat Oregon State 67 to 61, and Baylor beat Arkansas 81 to 72. And that's it for sports. Back to you, Tom.
So, Ian, how come Maddie started you off with such an easy day in traffic, not deaths and limbs littered all over the place like yesterday?
He told me to wait until it got to 7:30. He said 6:30 was easier.
That is the truth. that is absolutely the truth. Do we have Joel?
Yes.
Joel. Hey, Joel, how are you, buddy? Go Blue. Go Blue.
And, Chief, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. You're going to explain to me all about this, what's the name of this firm? Acadephos, Archegos Capital Management, which is really a family office. What is with these guys? Did you guys have the clue you were selling all that stock early, or what?
You know, Chief, you got me on a day. You know I got the Final Four tonight. I'm all fired up, and I don't know what to rant about first. Do you want to rant about that first? What's going on? They want to blame the whole damn market on this family office. Come on, Chief.
Oh, I know.
What happened with Viacom? That was telegraphed last Monday. You know what they did last Monday?
I was not watching it. Tell me, please.
The stock traded $100. Have you seen what that stock has done, Viacom?
No.
Have you seen what that stock has done, Chief?
I've not been watching
since
that one, no.
Since March. Okay. So, all right, let's just go since the beginning of the year. It went from 38.39 to 100 bucks, right?
Yep.
The company comes out last Monday and says, ho-ho, we want to do an offering. Well, hell yeah, you want to do an offering because you know your stock is ridiculously overvalued. Morgan Stanley helps them out with the offering. They do the offering at 85 bucks, okay? After a stock has gone from 40 to over 100, and that's not even including the March low was under double, was in single digits. Do you want to buy a stock at 85 on a secondary with the company offering stock to you? I mean, give me a break. So they do the offering. They make the offering price. It goes down that day. They do the offering price at 85. Where do you think it opens on Wednesday? Right on the kisser, right? 85 is supposed to be support. It opens up. It can't even get over 85. Morgan Stanley just jammed everyone with that offering. It's unbelievable. And then all the people that were long the stock started hitting it. So there's, you know, people are like, oh, poor Morgan and Goldman. I don't want to say who was on the other side of that block trade, but man, oh, man. It's the market structure. It's the way these stocks are going up for absolutely no reason. It's so much deeper than one little family office breaking the market. I don't know why people are so naive to the situation.
I would
the
agree
entire
with
entire market structure. Everyone is looking great when the stock is going from 40 to 100, but no one knows what the hell to do when it goes from 100 to 70 in one day.
Real quick, Joel, before I do want to talk about Michigan. That's a great story. How many firms do you think are leaking out treasury stock into these huge prices that so many stocks are in? They don't have to report that, do they, if you leak out some treasury stock?
I don't know why the hell they would do that. I mean, there's standards. I don't know. Maybe more than you think. I mean, it's a tough business out there. No commissions. They're finding ways to make money, and, you know, they're just trying to make money in, you know, every way they can. So I don't know how deep it is, but some very poor risk, you know, you're making it look like it's poor risk management, but you can't tell me the banks would take, I mean, whatever they say happened, I know Nomura was more on the hook, but, you know, if you want a recipe for disaster, and that's one thing we talk about in our show, and I sure hope the people listening to Stocks and Jocks know what the hell they're doing with their portfolio, and they are not, if they're on margin, I hope that they are sitting in front of their computer, they are watching their stocks like crazy, and they have exit points, because if there's one thing that can bring down this market, and I'm not saying it's going down, but man, you get a crescendo of margin calls like that, and you're going to have a whole heap of trouble. So I think the best lesson that people can learn from this is, be careful if you're on margin. Nothing in my portfolio accounts ever, in my entire life, have I ever bought anything on margin. Intraday trading, overnight trading, swing trading, maybe, yeah, I'm using some margin.
I got it.
Holy moly, if you're using margin in your portfolio, you better be careful.
I don't have it up here right now, Joel, but one of our listeners, sent me a thing yesterday that the margins might get record levels now or something.
That's not good.
No.
If anything that makes me bearish, and I mean, besides, like, you got a quad top in the S&Ps, we're coming off an expiration, earnings season coming. I mean, you also, another thing, too, you got the end of the quarter coming. Who's going to dress things up? Who's going to dress things down? But you have a clear area of resistance in the market. And if we can't clear that, the current high, actually, you got a couple closes in the same area. There's a great low-risk short in the area if you're willing to risk up to the all-time high.
Well, we don't want to
say that very often, but
we don't want to short.
Very defined risk in a market.
We don't want to short Michigan basketball. Can they beat Gonzaga?
Well, first we got to beat UCLA, right? Who doesn't have a player over 6'9". Also, their point guard is 5'10". One knock against Michigan was that we had a short point guard in Mike Smith, who's just a little over 6 feet. So first things first, let's take care of the Bruins.
Wait a minute.
If he comes out,
are we talking about Mike Smith? Are we talking with or without hair? That guy's not 6 feet.
What, Mike Smith?
Yeah.
Well, okay, with hair, maybe. You got me, Chief.
Yeah, looks like he's about 5'9". Anyway.
He's taller than that guy from UCLA.
Maybe. Yeah, he's not very big either.
Yeah, so, I mean, but that was, you know, you're talking, eight. You know, if you got a six, yeah, you're right, he's 5'11", but with hair, he's probably 6'1". But anyways, the guy from, it's not a disadvantage. Maybe he's the same height, but that other guy has some pretty nice hair, too.
Yep.
You gotta admit. What's his name? Tiger Campbell or something like
that?
Yeah,
he's a good player.
But anyway.
Well, they both are good players.
Anyways, Chief, man, did you see with Dwayne Juwan, some of those plays that he draws up for that team? It's like when I used to play basketball down at Montrose in Lake Shore Drive. I would dribble in. I would draw two defenders, underneath bounce pass to the open guy underneath the basket. I mean, Juwan is coaching them up. Gonzaga has a bunch of beasts. We do have some experience in our team from Final Four, so let's get by UCLA, and then I'll do some homework on Gonzaga.
How much do you think, Joel, of a lot of the upsets and stuff are people not playing out of their conference and all of a sudden run into a totally different style and just have no idea what to do?
I just think that it's a weird year. And I said this before, and I gave, you know, Illinois and the big – I mean, Michigan has been in Indianapolis for 3 weeks. You know, they haven't seen their family. I mean, it's just a weird year. So that's the upset. But when you talk about all of the upsets, you got a number one seed making it into the finals last night. You got a number two seed making it into the finals. And then you got two number ones playing tonight. So, you know, you can do all your upsets and pick all your pools and everything. But when it comes down to the chalk, it comes down to the chalk. And I sure hope Michigan comes through.
Well, they had some chart the other night about the average. The seeds making it into the Sweet 16 was like 5.67, which is actually relatively high, even with all the upsets.
Yeah. I mean, chalk is chalk. I mean, Gonzaga, they're big, they're strong. They have 2-3 NBA players. It's tough, but, you know, let's see. I just want to take one game at a time. I did, since I am vaccinated, I did put in, Michigan sent me an email. They're like, hey, man, do you want tickets for the Final Four? And I made a lifetime pact to my daughter, Dana. We went in 13, we went in 18. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I'm going to do a little trip to Indy. I'm actually going to not only leave my house, I might leave my block. I might leave my state for the first time in over 13 months.
Well, if you come through Illinois, come see us.
Okay. All right, Chief.
But if you're going to
be fired up today,
if you come through Chicago and away to Indianapolis,
I'm not on tomorrow because I'll be staying up. It's a pajama game for Michigan fans.
The
go blue.
If you come here and you're away to Indianapolis, you'd be like Charles Barkley, you know, going in Indianapolis. Take care of yourself, buddy.
He wasn't too nice to me when I saw him in San Antonio. I'm not a big Chuck fan.
All right.
He wouldn't take a picture with me.
Okay.
But anyways, go blue.
All right. SP futures down 13. NASDAQ futures 88. Everything's down here at this point. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. If Matt Weber on the board, let me sneak a little too long there. S&P Futures down 13, NASDAQ Futures down 90. Kenny, was that your dulcet tones I just heard?
It is. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Tell me all about your buddies at the Goldman Sachs. I'm going to get on you right away here because you're the one who knows all this stuff.
I just put that in my notes this morning, you know, talking about this whole situation. I assume you're talking about the Chagos Capital situation, right?
Yeah, you know a guy named Hugh S-O-N, Hugh Sun?
No.
He's a CNBC writer. And if the guy is, boy, I tell you what, people get, you know, there's an article here, we should send it out, but it's how Goldman and Morgan Stanley avoided losses after fund meltdown burned Nomura and Credit Suisse. And all he does is talk about how Goldman and Morgan Stanley knew these guys were in trouble before anybody else, and without telling anybody, puked out huge block trades of this stock before it started to go down. Now, is that something we should be proud of?
Goldman did exactly what Goldman did, right? On Friday when Archegos was getting, or Thursday, whenever the margin call started, Archegos Capital, you know, now to the he had relationships with five or six different prime brokers, was borrowing money all over the place to finance these very sophisticated, complex trades that he kept secret from all the other banks. So shame on them for not understanding the risk, but that's a whole other conversation. But when they did finally understand the risk, because they called them and they said, hey, Billy, by the way, we need some extra cash because the Chinese internet stocks are going lower, and you had a big margin account here, and because the value goes low, you got to put more cash. And when Billy couldn't put up more cash, he calls all the big banks and he says, hey, listen, can we just play I Got a Secret here until we figure this out? Don't go telling anybody. Well, you know what Goldman does right away. Hangs up the phone and says, bullshit, they're out. And
yeah.
So they start whacking the market. Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley right behind them. But they don't say anything naturally during the day because they're trying to have least impact. And then on Saturday morning, if you notice in the Wall Street Journal, a big headline, how Goldman blew out $10.5 billion worth of stocks from some unnamed hedge fund that couldn't meet its capital call. And that left First Boston and Nomura holding the bag because they didn't do anything on Friday. And now the prices of these stocks are even lower. And now they've got to try to recoup their money, which is what happened yesterday when they came out and announced that, this is going to be a hit, potentially to their bottom line. And that's when investors sold those stocks off, you know, 14 and 16% respectively. But I'm not surprised at what Goldman does, because Goldman does what Goldman does. It protects its own ass, which I guess is what everyone should do. But that was the case. I didn't read his story, but I will.
All right, let me get this straight. If you could be the only guy I know that still is high fashion enough to have a shoeshine guy. If Kenny Pulcheri gets a tip from the shoeshine guy, we can't wait to slam you in the slammer. Now, who the hell did Goldman sell that stock to? Do you think they had information that the person they sold it to didn't have?
Well, listen, they sold it out in the public market, right? So here's the question.
So there was some kind of black trade.
There was a problem with Archegos Capital. They knew that they couldn't come up with the money. They knew that this was basically going to be a fire sale. So Goldman, you know, as did Morgan Stanley, as did, you know, yesterday, I guess, by the time it came out, because it came out on Saturday about the unnamed source. So First Boston and Nomura, really, it was public by then. But, you know, you can make that argument. Goldman knew something that other people didn't.
yet they were selling it out in the public marketplace, selling the stock in the public marketplace, trying to cover their ass, right? Trying to preserve and not really lose as much money as you potentially could. But hey, look, that's part of the risk, right? And that's part of the problem. So I know where you're kind of going with that, but I'm not necessarily sure that that's is it insider information? I guess you would qualify to say that it is, because they knew of an impending situation. I don't know how that holds up.
My old professor used to say, don't worry about insider trading. As long as you have a market, of course, in those days you had a market that was centralized.
Yeah.
Because people will figure out who the thieves are and they just won't trade with them. Now,
well, the truth is this. And it's so funny you say this, because it is so true. When the New York Stock Exchange was the center of the market, and everything that, you know, everything like this was going to be sold, if I was in that stock, Viacom, and Goldman Sachs kept coming back, and they'd sell stock, they'd come back, and some more stock, pretty soon, the next time Goldman walks in, you go, okay, Goldman's got even more for sale, and the buyers would naturally back off.
Right.
Right? And so there was a better conversation about, okay, buddy, what are you really trying to do? Because you keep coming in here, selling 100,000 share lots at a time, you say you're done, and then 5 minutes later, you come back. So that would force this conversation. In today's market, because it's all electronic, and it's all completely scattered, right? There are 11 exchanges and 50-plus dark pools that Goldman can access with their computer and spray the market and not ever have a conversation with anybody because there's nobody left. It's all computers. And so,
well,
therefore,
the computers aren't as big a... I think the computers aren't as big a problem as the scattered part.
But to your point, that's exactly right.
Right.
Because now there's no one place to have a conversation.
And then, of course, we had people on CNBC ranting and raving about the SEC and family offices. Why don't you think the SEC should ever have a week in the life of Goldman Sachs and see what they find?
Wow. The SEC, I bet you the SEC will never have a week in the life of Goldman Sachs because there's too many Goldman people in the government, right?
Well, that's true.
They go from Goldman to the government, which is how they keep themselves insulated.
All right, Kenny, I got a question for a guy that's never gotten that big, unlike you know, not people you know. I'm not going to say you, but people you know. Even the biggest people on the CBOE, and if, you know, if somebody gave me whatever, give me $2 billion, I'd pick a very, very good clearing firm, a very, very good futures firm, and I'd have all that stuff going. But I my stuff would always be kind of in one place. How big do you have to be, or what do you have to do to have 4 and 5? I mean, how the hell do you get from, say, Goldman's clearing these guys? I don't know if they were or they weren't. But say Goldman's clearing these, how do you get from there to Nomura? Are you doing over-the-counter trades, or what? I mean, are we counterparty risk? I mean, you can't just be doing, I mean, you could trade bazillion options and shares of stock and futures and everything else through two firms. You don't need all these banks. You could be the biggest.
No, but you don't. But don't forget the story about this Billy Huang. I guess in 2012 he was accused of doing something, and for a long time he didn't pass muster Goldman Sachs. Like, they would not do business with him. But then his fund became so big, and he was doing big commission business around the street. Suddenly Goldman wanted in because he was doing these big commissions. Suddenly his reputation was put aside, and they started doing business. Look, funds can have multiple prime broker, and most of them do, multiple prime broker relationships, right? I mean, when I was on the floor representing hedge funds, I had hedge funds that sometimes had 3 or even 4 relationships with all the big banks, right? It was First Boston, it was Goldman, it was J.P. Morgan, or it was Bank of America. And so, yeah, it used to be Lehman, it used to be Bear Stearns. They don't exist anymore. But it's not uncommon for a hedge fund to have multiple relationships. And they have that for different reasons, right? They get access to the calendar at those different banks, the Goldman's Bank, and First Boston, J.P. Morgan. So they get access to the calendar. They do securities lending, all that stuff. So they want to have the ability to kind of spread it around, which is okay. There's nothing illegal about doing that. But what I think is going to be very interesting here, it's going to come out of this case study, is that none of these banks knew the risk that they were all under based on the trades, apparently, that Archegos was doing in terms of the swaps and the stuff. They knew what their risk was, but they didn't know that First Boston had risk, and Nomura had risk, and Goldman Sachs had the same risk. And that's, I think, going to be the question that that everyone's going to talk about. And you know what? I said, shame on the banks for not knowing, right?
Well, when you start doing that,
they get paid to know your customer. Shame on them for not knowing.
Well, I would have real problems with somebody starting to do over-the-counter stuff where there's counterparty risk. My trade with that guy, I don't even know if it's good then.
Agreed. So that's going to cause, you know, that'll certainly cause more conversation to that point. It's going to cause conversation about, you know, about what they know. And the fact that, you know, when Archegos was getting the calls from the banks about they needed more margin, and this guy was running into a problem, the fact that he was trying to say to them, okay, listen, let's just all come in a room and talk about this, but keep it quiet. Don't tell anybody until we figure it out. That just, you know, goes to the fact that they were trying to protect their own ass, but you see what Goldman did right away. Goldman stood up and said, want no part of this, and out the door they went. What's also interesting is that they don't need to, they don't, like, none of that was public information. Archegos didn't have to publicize what their position was, unlike in the GameStop issue, what's his name, the guy that was short, Marvin Capital, whatever it was that was short all that stock, he had to publish his short position, and so it was very public. People knew right away what his position was. In this case, people couldn't tell what the Archegos positions were and how complex and complicated they were until the margin calls started coming in, and he couldn't meet them, and then all of a sudden, boom, the big prime brokers, the big banks that had lent them the money went out there to cover their own assets.
Kenny, real quick final question. Our previous guest, Joel, was mentioning that it kind of all started with the secondary of this stock at $85, when it's not worth near that. And then when people started selling it off, obviously, it had room to roll on the way down. How much of that do you think is? I mean, if the stock was trading where it was worth, you should be able to unload it anywhere and not drop it at all or a little bit, right? Obviously,
I agree. But I agree. If it was really worth, they were trading at $80. If it was really worth $80, it should have been trading at $80. Which is another point I bring up. If you notice specifically Viacom and Discovery, between January and a week ago, these stocks had made dramatic moves, right? Viacom went from 39 to 100, and the Discovery went from 40 to 80 or wherever it was. And so you wonder, was it the Archegos, was it the very complex strategies that suddenly forced that push higher? Because if it was, then these stocks are just coming back to where they should be trading. Right?
Well, that was my point, yeah.
If stocks are really worth that, then they should be trading at that. But what you're going to find out is once these guys finish selling these positions, the stock is either going to bounce back to go back to 100 and go back to 80, or it's not. And that's going to be the telling sign of, was it properly priced at the time?
Well, Morgan Stanley evidently jammed it at a bunch of people at 85. Kenny, good stuff, buddy. Always good. Have a nice Easter. And we'll talk at you next week, buddy.
You as well.
SP Futures down 13. NASDAQ Futures down 91. Come back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401 8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by...
Something happening here.
Hello, North Face Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber and assistant on the board. S&P futures down 13, NASDAQ futures down 91. We have individual stocks in the Dow. Not a whole lot of movement. We've got Honeywell down 62 cents. We've got pretty much that's it. We got Microsoft down 2.25. And CRM is down 175. Jeff, you with us, buddy?
I am. Hey, Chief. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I don't know really where to start this morning with all this crazy stuff going on here. And what do you? We've been talking about this Archegos, I guess that's the name of the place, and how they manage to get involved in all these different prime brokerages, and they don't talk to each other. And all of a sudden, these guys got a problem. And then Morgan Stanley jams out some, you know, secondary 85 hours, and how they manage to get people to buy that, I don't know. I mean, it seems like. There's issues all around the place. Then you listen to people's report to the, you know, the SEC needs to do this and be involved in this. And as long as the SEC allows two or three people to do whatever they damn well please, moral or not, I won't say legal or illegal. I mean, how does everybody else just falls by the wayside or what? I mean, Goldman Sachs went out and sold a whole bunch of stock when they knew there was a situation to other people. I mean, this whole idea of being. Of owning, of being a trader and being involved with customers at the same time has stunk for 100 years. I mean, does it stink for you too, or just me?
Well, yeah, and we've had, you know, history of legislation and that's tried to separate, you know, banks and brokerage and Glass-Steagall, and you know, and then we go back and forth just because of the power of the financial lobbies over the years. That continues to muddy that water, but yeah, at the base, at its core, I'd have to agree with you that there's too much of a conflict to allow those empowered to, you know, retain people's assets to also be engaged in transactions of their assets as well. There's, you know, that it invariably has led to problems. So it's a tough one because it's. You know, it's consistent with the idea of a free market. It's not to restrict someone from acting in both capacities. And there's a good argument to be made there, but too often we've seen it abused. So,
well, Jeff, if I tell you I think you should sell Microsoft at 233, and you say who's buying it, and I say me, I'm going to say that somewhere along the line you're going to say, wait a minute, if it's such a horrible buy there, why are you buying it, right? I mean, come on. I mean, we're too old.
Well, why should you worry? You're not paying any commission.
Yeah. Where they used to say we're too old of a cat to get screwed by a kitten. I mean, come on. I mean, what?
Sure. Well, that's been the argument, though. That's what befuddled this whole. You gave the perfect illustration, but for the last 10 years or 5 years, nobody cared because, oh, it's a commission-free transaction. They never thought that payment for order flow actually implicated the amount that you end up paying for the transaction, that is actually a cost that you're being compensated in other ways. So that naivety allowed that to prosper. But sure, those are problems.
I wanted you to comment since you guys are the... Well,
I think everyone's still trying to unpack the full impact of Archegos. You know, this is the amount of leverage involved there was so material that these numbers. This clearly is a bigger scenario than the long-term capital management.
Well, maybe you can expand my feeble brain here. I got an email from one of our listeners, and I'll dig it up here. I don't know where I buried it, but it has to do with. Hedge fund margin loans right now, but retail margin loans are back to being at an all-time high. And hedge fund margin loans are not far off, right? So this is all part of this, what's going on with these guys. And I can understand where somebody has a, In our world, in the retail world at PTI, I mean, I used to be in the other world, the market maker world, but it's pretty clear that, or you know, a Tasty Trade or any place else. I mean, wherever it is, I mean, you focus on the margin as it relates to you. Okay, it really doesn't matter necessarily to you. I mean, if you have somebody that, I'll just go through this real basically. If you buy IBM, the Federal Reserve sets the margin, correct, Jeff? I mean, it's not the brokerage right. firm. It's not a competitive thing. So if you buy IBM, you got to put up 50% of the money. All right, if it starts to slide down, you don't have to go dollar for dollar on it like you do in a commodity future, or you did before 1929. You only have to put up more money when it reaches the 30% spot, unless the stock is so crazy that your clearing firm says, I want money sooner, which they can do, but let's just say that's not happening. By and large, the margin is not a, quote, a competitive issue. And we have some pretty big-sized traders. I mean, and so do you guys. And there were times when I was on the floor, I had a big account, I had a bunch of people trading for it. But the idea, how do you get, and I was with First Op, but how do you get to the point where you've got three or four different places, you doing stuff that's not necessarily as easily recognizable as to what the formulas are, and the different places don't know what you're doing at the other place. I mean, I understand people have different relationships, but when you start talking about that kind of borrowing, when you start doing over-the-counter trades, how is there not some kind of communication where, you know, that Goldman doesn't know that Nomura has the other side of this trade and they're wobbling on it or something? It seems like...
Yeah, that's a great question, particularly when you look at the pedigree of these names. You have Credit Suisse and Nomura and Goldman and Morgan Stanley. They're all involved in the trade, and Deutsche Bank, too. They're all involved in counter-trading on this and connected to this trade.
Well, I understand.
Yeah, it seems like a lesson that's not lost from the prior savings and loan crisis, from the banking crisis, from long-term capital management. The ripple effect, you know, it just seems to be lost. You wonder what these risk management firms have learned in terms of, you know, what happens when all correlations go to one and the shit hits the fan. And this should be a lesson that's been learned many times before.
Well, they tried to get some of these people on with these credit default swaps and stuff. They tried to get them on exchanges, and they just outweighted them. There's none on exchanges, and there's no different. I mean, what we're talking about, I mean, listeners, we're going to be a little up this morning in terms of level we're talking, but that's just where we are here, and I think that's why people listen. But when you have there's exchange-traded contracts. We start from the beginning here, Jeff, and give me 30 seconds. That's why you want an exchange, okay? A clearing corp is before there was a CBOE, they were put and call brokers. Or you could buy a call option, but you'd go to a put-and-call broker, say at Merrill Lynch or someplace. And if you decided you wanted to sell that call option, you may, in fact, if you had two firms, you could sell it to some guy at Bear Stearns. Now, you think you're flat, but really you're not. You're long the option with Merrill Lynch, and you're short it at Bear Stearns. Now, in 99% of the cases, those firms don't go under, and you're sort of okay. It's like having a, you know, you bet the Bears with Jeff, and then the point spread runs, and then you bet the Lions with Matt Weber. Okay, well, that's fine. But if you never see Jeff again, you still got to pay Matt Weber if you lose, right? So yeah. Once you start doing that, that's why when the exchange came out, if you bought a 10-lot IBM options, then you sold that 10-lot out, either on the trading floor or as a retail client, you are flat because your position is with OCC, and now you don't have a position. You're flat. You could have bought it from XYZ acronym and, you know, and sold it to YYZ, and they have their positions with OCC, but you are flat. You don't care who you traded with the first time or the second time because an exchange got in the middle or clearing corp, and you're flat. So, but once you start every other forward transaction, and if you're a company that needs the, my stepfather was in this business, if you needed to buy watches in June, you would go to, in those days, you know, Continental Bank or somebody, but today it would be BMO or whoever it is. You're going to go there and say, I want some Swiss franc futures, and I need them by June 15th, and they will give you a forward contract. Now, that contract is with BMO. Now, BMO is going to turn around and probably flatten that out, and somebody from Switzerland wants to buy dollars forward in June, and they're okay. They charge you something, they charge those something, they made some money in the middle. But those contracts are still live, right, Jeff? Now, but even in those cases, probably your checking account is with the bank, so they've got your money. So there is, in essence, a margin deposit because they've got your dough. But when guys like this, I don't know how you get from Goldman being your clearing agent to some huge position with Nomura and these other places. I wouldn't even know how to do that, Jeff. I mean, part of me, I guess, is I'm jealous. But how big do you have to be to do that? And what is your advantage in doing that?
Well, I don't have the answer to the question, but if you want to complicate the question more, add in the fact that in 2016, Bill Wang, the manager of Archipagos, was, you know, found guilty of wire fraud, and then in 2018 of insider trading, and Goldman wouldn't even do business with him in 2018. So what changed so much from 2018 until now that they essentially extended a margin loan line of credit up to $1 billion, which is what was just unwound in a couple of days? So they go from not doing business with him because of a wire fraud conviction and pleading guilty on an insider trading case to $1 billion in leverage.
Well, same thing happened to, this is not a political state, the same thing happened to Trump at Deutsche Bank, where part of the bank was trying to boot him out and the other part was giving him a new loan.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, when
it gets back to this risk management scenario. What are these guys doing?
Well,
or is it because, you know, there's another answer, and the answer is that because there's just so much potential, you know, profit to the upside, and in the past they've seen that you know, bailouts occur anyway, so that maybe they feel they have a capped risk and unlimited upside.
Well, that could be. I was actually thinking
that's a little cynical, but it's, you know, we've seen it historically to be true.
Speaking of cynical, I was thinking of you last night. One of the guys, I don't remember the names on CNBC, which is just as well, so I shouldn't be using them anyway. One of the guys, he's on all afternoon now, and he's he's one of their bigger guests in the afternoon, was talking about how he just absolutely loves China, and he's still got a lot of investments over there and is encouraging people. And I'm thinking, God, if Jeff could hear this, he'd like shoot the TV or something. And then we had Nike getting...
Was that an investor? Is that who you're talking about?
He's more than Dr. J's a contributor. This guy's actually an employee on CNBC. I think he is anyway. But I mean, you're talking...
Sure.
But, and then last week, it was the week before, where they had Nike was getting slapped around by China because they didn't want to get stuff out of the area where the slave labor was going down. So people can't wait to go out. I mean, we're gonna go rough up a Chinese person and we're gonna go out and buy Nikes. I mean, is there the morality here is who is it? Did Lenin said the capitalist will be happy to sell you a rope for which you're gonna hang him or something? What are we, this whole thing with China now, is this totally under the rug since Trump's not yelling at him? We go back to just, if we get cheaper there, we're good to go?
Well, I think which has been widely reported, but at the same time, I think the materiality and significance of it has been underreported, was the summit that was in Alaska a couple of weeks back. That was somewhat unprecedented to have Chinese officials actually calling out the United States for their activities. It was supposed to be a summit. I think China is clearly signaling to a new administration that, hey, you know, we're not laying down for you at this point going forward. That was very combative. That wasn't very diplomatic by any means. I think Blinken was caught way off guard, you know, whereas a Pompeo, who was, you know, certainly far more assertive, would not have kind of let that scenario pass in the manner in which it did. So I think that really indicates what's going on going forward. I think, you know, China is going to ramp up its rhetoric and flex its muscles a little bit with an administration that might be more inclined to find a middle than to confront. And we'll see what lies ahead. But that was a big signal that clearly showed us that China is a foe that requires a strategy. Whether it's confrontation or appeasement, we'll let the administration figure it out, but they're going to be our problem.
Well, at the end of the day, Jeff...
And to be clear, you know, despite what the media wants to continue to stress with Russia and Russia disinformation and all that stuff, which I think guys like Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi have been doing a great job in writing on lately, is that Russia is still a pimple, you know, on the global global butt compared to China. I mean, you have an economy that's smaller than Brazil's, so they are not the threat. Their GDP is not in the top 10, let alone where China sits. So we should be much more aware and not so naive as to where the true threats are.
Well, Jeff, how do you, if you were president, and I wouldn't mind seeing you there, but if you were president, how do you, I mean, there's a term for this where there's all this stuff going on up top, and yet at the bottom, commerce is just going on and on. And when I say that is, you know, Trump was like a Poppin' Jay, whatever, Fox or whatever, he'd be up there, you know, touting about China, he's going to listen to that. And now, you know, Biden's going to be, he's going to be strict with this and that and his people and over there. The simple fact is, the American people want no part, they don't care about the morales over there. You do and I do, but we're very rare. The other people, it's not they don't care, they don't care to know, so that way they don't care. But I mean, the fact is, nobody wants trade with China stopping because they're buying stuff cheap, and nobody cares if the pollution's over there, and nobody cares if people are enslaved over there as long as they get their blue jeans cheaper. I mean, no matter what, that does not seem like it's going to stop. It doesn't appear to me. No matter how much these guys yell up and down, no matter how many Chinese people going rough up on the street, which is insane, it seems like the commerce is there. I mean, our guy, Dan Janita, says that he's talking to one of the companies over there, and the containers are coming over here full, and they're going back empty. I mean, I don't know if that's a lag on that, but still, he's like, nothing's changed. I mean, we just want the stuff from there. I mean, it would have been the same way, would we have wanted the stuff from Hitler, no matter what he did? I mean, we just don't care when dollars are involved?
Well, I'm not sure that's complete. Well, I accept your premise that our demand is great and unchanged, but I'm not sure that it's for the same reason. I don't think there is this awareness. I mean, look at how the two parties have been pushing who our number one foe is. There should be no debate. There should be zero debate. Yet for political reasons, you know, Democrats and Republicans can't even agree that China is our greatest geopolitical and economic threat when all the indications are clear that it is. This Russia thing was just, you know, a political distraction. They're a threat, but a much smaller threat in a much more narrower instance. So without a national consensus, as long as, you know, our political partisanship doesn't allow us to see fact and to be blinded by the truth, then there won't be any consensus that would be, you know, result in any kind of activism that might reduce the demand for China products. The irony of that is, you know, we can do it with a couple of little woke social justice warriors on Twitter who don't have a job but just sit around trolling people all day long. We can generate boycotts of real companies in a matter of 15 minutes because someone made a mistake or retweeted something that 15 years ago might have been considered, you know, inappropriate, and we can actually have an economic impact on an American company for something as ridiculous as that. But when we have a true global geopolitical foe, we can't seem to be on the same page.
Jeff, if you're a violent sort of kid and you like hurting people, and you go to the playground, you really don't pick on the toughest guy. you pick on the weakest guy, right? If that's your shtick.
Yeah, particularly when you're hiding behind a keyboard, that's a good strategy.
So who do we have, and I'm not so sure you and I would even be up for this, or any of the listeners, even though it would sound good. Who do we have? I mean, Kevin and I were talking about this last week because somebody, I was going back and forth with one of the listeners on email. I refused to tweet, but having to do with the China situation. Kevin thinks that probably a solid 50 to 60, and maybe Maddie Weber can opine on this, universities are taking money from Nike. Well, now those are people that are supposed to be informed rather than, you know, the kid in the hood not buying his Nikes because they got bad labor. And I mean, I don't really expect, you know, my 13-year-old son, if I had one, to be up on the politics in China to the point where he doesn't want Nikes. I mean, I guess I would be proud of him if he did, but I'm not so sure I think he'd be there yet, right? But clearly, the university should know, and they're totally shameful, lack of shame about taking money from these guys for their athletic programs, right? I mean, the pro
right, and the universities have been compromised in a more systemic manner by this. I'm forgetting the name of it, but one of your listeners would know. There's a organization that was called the Chinese. It's embedded in universities across the country. It's a kind of Chinese organization that has impact on curriculum and has impact on faculty. It is, and its students are a member of it nationwide, and it funnels money and it increases awareness of sympathetic leanings towards China across American universities. And that organization is a definite issue. It's been brought up politically before. It might occur to me while we're talking, or to someone else.
What I'm talking about, and Oregon State has got how many millions of dollars from Nike? So I mean, if you're a student there,
and then we found in recent cases, right, just within the last year, including at Harvard, there's been on staff professors who have been paid by as Chinese spies by the Chinese government. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's a fact. You know, over half $1 million a year was paid to somebody on staff at Harvard as a tenured professor, and it's being paid by the Chinese by the CCP. So
you think
they've done a pretty good job of infiltrating just American business and our education infrastructure and a lot of things.
I'm trying to think if somebody has infiltrated Stacks and Jacks, who would your suspicions be?
It'd be Matt.
You think so?
It'd be Matt. I've never trusted Matt.
I haven't either. No, it's just one of those things.
Yeah.
He's kind of sneaky.
It's definitely Matt.
the infiltration of what was the Kim Philby of Stacks and Jacks, right? But I mean, how do you turn the public opinion right now? We have people don't think they're broke because the savings are going up because of the money the government's giving people. I mean, looking at some of these,
and fortunately, there's no inflation, right?
Well, why does silver and gold go down every day? I mean, I don't. Insane to me, but
I don't know. Maybe one possible reason that was suggested is we were pondering this exact same question: why is silver and gold losing its kind of its hedging characteristic, at least, economic hedge characteristic, and maybe it's because of the rise of cryptocurrencies. Dollars would normally, in some sort of economic uncertainty, would be finding itself to silver and gold markets, and now it seems to be finding itself to crypto.
Well, in the interest rate world, the formula would be that if interest rates run up for just whatever reason, supply and demand reason, your price of gold should go down, because obviously to keep gold the money you cost to hang onto it you're not getting any dividend on gold, and by the way, it pays, you got to pay to store it. But if the interest rates going up are being caused by inflation fears, it should be just the opposite, and that is a stronger pull than the interest rate, right? I mean, it should be anyway. But I see a lot of issues with like the valuations and thing all over the black here, and I mean I don't know where they're going to come from, because you look back and I just was going through the Iranian situation, and or not the Iranian, the Turkish situation last week. I don't even mention when you were on, Jeff, but when they were having the issues with, of course, that story is dead now. We heard that for one day, now that's on page 45, where they fired their central banker, and they're all of a sudden their currency went down like what, 16% in one day or whatever.
That story did disappear.
And of course they're pushing 19% rate. So immediately, I just Googled Turkish money supply, and I knew right what I was going to find. It's like doubled in the last 2.5 years, and it never ends, Jeff. And I know you had the Luckbox with the new monetarist, but how does somebody come out and say that doesn't happen? It happens every single time. It's like, if somebody falls off a horse, they get hurt. Oh no, you don't get hurt when you fall off. You can say that all you want, but the fact is, people do, right? If you're really good at falling off, I guess you don't get hurt as much as like if I landed like a sack of wheat. But what I'm saying? I mean, how do you deny the fact that when you put too much money in the system, this stuff happens? It does. I mean, it has for centuries, for God's sake. It happened in Rome, for God's sake, when they started giving you more coins with less silver per coin. I mean, how do you just deny all that stuff all of a sudden? But people are. And people, you know, if it sounds good, you want to believe it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that seems to be the drill.
Stephanie Kelton was the economic advisor on the transition campaign for President Biden. So.
But how does
that thinking is not just selling books; it's finding its influence at the top of our political infrastructure.
Well, how do you get from that to what's the lady? She was on the show a couple times. She talks about the news media not being so good. What the hell's her name?
Not being what? I'm sorry.
The news media not doing their job and so forth. And I'm going brain dead on names lately, but I'll get it from Maddie. Yeah.
An author?
She's out of Washington. As soon as I mention the name, you'll know. She's been on the show.
Cheryl Atkinson?
Yeah, Cheryl Atkinson. And
she's a good guest. She's pretty good.
Oh, God, she's spectacular.
I've read a couple of her books. She's on it.
If we have her back on, though, you and Lou and everybody else got to wrestle because everybody wants to be on with her. And they want to get rid of me. Get the chief out of there, and I'll just take over when she's here. But she's spectacular, and she's convinced in a lot of ways that not only is the media, but she thinks it's just incompetence. And it's interesting. I had dinner with a couple of serious right wingers and their 12-year-old right winger child the other night, and I was talking to these guys. I said, you know, everybody's fighting from one side to the other. Do you think it's just the new generation of, we're not talking about people that were generals in World War II and those kinds of things, or not that generals make you, you know, genius, whatever, but I said, do you think people are just incompetent? That they don't ask the right questions? You think Jay Pritzker and Lori Lightfoot, everybody, you know, the people on the right, you know, hate them. Do you think they're just over their head? I mean, and do you think other people, their senators, don't really know what they're talking about when they question the chairman of the Fed or something. They just have no idea that they have a skill set that got them elected, which is a skill set. Don't get me wrong ever, because if it was easy to do, you and I would have done it if we wanted to, right? But it's not that easy to do.
That's right.
I mean, Trump had how many people? You can say what you want about the guy, but there were how many people that wanted that spot when he got up on the debate the first day? It was like 9 people. Then they had the little boy debate the next night or something. I mean,
17.
There were 17 people
at one point.
And somehow, I mean, don't think there's not a skill set there, that these guys don't get to that spot. But do they really know what's going on? Do they really have an idea? I mean, I think that the problems now are getting so multifaceted, Jeff, that we haven't really, you know, with years and years of offshoring the labor, and we have a bifurcation in the labor system. People that are worth $25 an hour are more than willing, or not more than willing, but are willing to work for 15, knowing that they really should be paid more than that. Now, I'm not saying they should all strike. I'm not saying they should all unionize. But it's almost like that we put child labor back in the system, and it screwed up the supply and demand because something's wrong. And we have
things have clearly gotten more specialized and beyond, you know, the lawmakers' capabilities to actually regulate and understand, and that's rarely more evident than when they have Silicon Valley tech firms on Capitol Hill for hearings and investigations, or they're talking about privacy issues and technology, and you can tell by the questioning across both parties that they're just not on par with the people that they're questioning. So the question being, you know, how can you regulate and legislate activity that you literally don't understand is provided a lot of cover for big tech in recent years, because we just don't understand what they're doing every day.
Well, it's happened
so
fast.
Certainly, don't know how to effectively regulate it.
Well, I mean, that is definitely, you know, one of the issues. But are we supposed to be out here to break guys? Or are we over? What are we doing? All right, and then we'll come right back and finish this up because we're opening up questions. But I don't just to lead you on this one, Jeff. We do have laws in this country. We say we don't want, you know, we obviously we have issues with reparations, slavery, and all kinds of stuff. Tell me why. I mean, there's degrees of slavery, right? Tell me why we allow people to bring people from Asia usually in to work at the Googles of the world at a certain salary, and then once they're here, they're indentured to that company, and if somebody offers them $80,000 down the block, they can't move. And oh, by the way, they're taking a spot that probably competitively is $100,000 here. Now, isn't that the same as putting somebody in a factory in China and paying them less than they're worth? Just on a different level?
Yes.
And why exactly do we allow S&P futures down 14, NASDAQ futures down 97? Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Matt Weber, and Buddy on the board over here, Ian. S&P futures down 1575, NASDAQ futures 99. Market is just not happy with what's going on with this hedge fund firm and this Viacom, and I don't think they like the idea of some of these banks looking like they're in trouble now. How much more money the central bank's got to give them back to make up for this? I mean, I hate to even say that, but boy, it's true though. We got to get them their money back, right? We got to do something. Not so sure what we're doing, but what did Yogi Berra say? If you don't know where you're going, you don't know when you get there, or something along those lines. Dow futures down 17. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 100 now, 0.7%. FTSE down up 7.1%. CAC around up 30.5. That's even though the bonds are going up. Well, they're getting more towards zero over there in Asia. Nikkei up 48. That's 0.1%. Shanghai up 21 though. That's 0.6. Hang Seng up 239. That's 0.8. Wave review yesterday, we had kind of an inside day. Dow up 98. S&P down 3, NASDAQ down 79. Bonds are the big news this morning. They're up three basis points, 1.758, which is the highest we've seen them. Bund, a positive 5 basis points to minus 0.26, hopefully going towards zero. Japan up 1 at 0.08. We've got oil down 85 cents, 60.71. Brent down 73 cents, 64.25. Natural gas up 1 cent, 266. Gold down 27 bucks. It's 16.86. Gotta be gonna put a bottom in here someplace. I guess the bottom is zero, huh? Silver down 52 cents, 24.25. Copper down 3 cents. And we've got crypto. We've got the Bitcoin up 1,459,115. What do you guys got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
It's 39 minutes past the hour. Traffic, we've got a good start this morning. Still pretty clear roads except for an accident at 63rd on I-94. Weather in Chicago, it is cloudy, sunny today with a high of 64. Should be a pretty mild day. In Phoenix, however, it is sunny without a cloud, high of 86. For sports, the Bulls lost to the Warriors last night, 116-102. The Blackhawks didn't play, and in the NCAA, Houston beat Oregon State 67-61, and Baylor beat Arkansas 81-72. Back to you, Tom.
So, Jeff, we have those kinds of issues, and even though I'm in the middle now, but people still accuse me of being on the right. On the left, sorry. Actually, some accuse me of being on the right now that I've moved more toward the middle, but one thing I can always kind of stop the onslaught from the right is when I start talking about the AOCs of the world and the Bernie Sanders, and we want to go socialist, we want to go this and that. And I said, okay, well, I don't agree with really any of that. I said, but before we start this, why don't you tell me what you think our system is right now? And somebody will say, well, we're in capitalism. I said, are we really? How do you define it? Name me five industries that are actually competitive. Now, that usually stops the conversation stone cold. But why do we constantly got to get ourselves involved into the competitive process in a way that does nothing but pick winners and losers, Jeff? I mean, clearly these firms that are able to bring people from overseas to work for a lot less than... How is that helping the labor situation here? Not to mention the fact... creating kind of a shadow that has to work for Google for 6 months and he can't go anywhere else. I mean, why do we even think of stuff like that? I mean, how does that even pass?
Well, the H-1B program's been around for a while. I think it goes back to 1990, I believe, is when it was implemented. But it was only a handful of people. It was Bill Gates, actually, in about 2008 that asked the House Committee to raise the cap from, it was then 65,000 to 195,000 workers. So that's and that ultimately succeeded. So that's 195,000 workers that are allowed under H-1B visas. And the thing that's most interesting about this is that these are really high-paying jobs. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the debate as to whether or not these jobs could be filled by U.S. citizens and they're taking jobs away from U.S. citizens, because I wouldn't claim to have that knowledge to know, you know, what the capabilities are there. But looking at a breakdown of Google form responses of people who had H-1B visas, when you look at that breakdown, I'm looking at it right now, 68% of the Google H-1B visa employees were earning between $100,000 and $250,000 at Google. 19% were earning between $250,000 and $750,000. Only 13% earned less than $100,000.
Okay.
So these are extremely high-paying jobs.
At Google, but a lot of them aren't.
Obviously, technical jobs that are... not going to Americans, so.
But I mean, a lot of them aren't, though. And what I've read, you
yep.
usually are on this more than me, but there's a lot of other that are lower level than I don't know. They sound like they're a lot of money, Jeff, but I don't want you and I to sound like the people on CNBC. If somebody's making $50,000, that's okay for him. Was it the pool, the pond? We got both. The pond would be good for you. Was it in Chevy Chase. Oh, well,
of course. No, simple rule: never count someone else's money. That's
so. I mean, we don't really
I live and die by that. But yeah. I'm just simply saying these are not low paying jobs.
No, but they're also.
So we don't know when you have up to 195,000 of these visas available, and there's that much money at stake in terms of average salaries. It's having an impact on the economy and American citizens.
So I guess if my question is, and again, it could be fine, Jeff. But if you and I all of a sudden had Jeff's software, if we can't say to the guy, hey, this guy's like really good, they're paying him 150, he's worth more than that. If we can't offer him 175, that's a problem for me.
Yeah, how do they get indentured servitude out of them? It's interesting. Well, they lobbied hard enough for it, so they paid for it through lobbyists. They figured we should be able to keep the people that we paid Washington to.
I don't normally read these bills. Between doing this and managing and watching out for my clients, it's kind of a full day deal, but. I got involved in this part of this thing that Biden just passed. Actually, it's a third iteration of like the PPP and an Employee Retention Act. And I was looking to see in there because some of my friends, have businesses. And by the way, PTI is a business. So I started to read on this thing. I don't know how much you've dug into this, but if you read the thing, you can just tell the lobbyists down the line. And it's funny. This is where the government has a program where they're going to pay firms for essentially retaining employees. Okay. Now, I don't necessarily think, since we didn't close up, that, we, quote, deserve anything, whatever deserve means. But the fact is, when people are spreading money around to this extent, if something is there for you, you're foolish not to take it because the person who gets it is going to try and buy your place or something with the extra money they didn't deserve, right?
That's right.
It's sort of insane. If somebody's going to wing $100 bills around the bingo hall, I think it's pretty stupid. But if you're the only guy who doesn't have the $100 bill, it's not so good either. So I'm reading this thing, and they have a bifurcation. I hope I'm not boring you here, between essential and non-essential businesses. Okay, so a securities firm is considered an essential business. So if you're an essential business, and then they'll say you either have to have your revenue has to drop below 80%, or you have to be totally or partially shut down. Okay, so, but now if you're an essential business, and we're downtown, and one of us made it to work every day, only because I was able to figure out doing the show, and I'm pretty clever with the traffic, that I was able to get in here in the morning by using the, Harrison Street Bridge, because it was the only one they didn't close. It's the one by the post office, right? None of the trains were running, and all the other bridges were closed. So by any definition, downtown was more than partially shut down, right? But we managed to get a couple people in here because we wanted to. And we did routine stuff for our clients. We had most of the people were home. And by any stretch, we were partially shut down. Yet, I don't care if there is this bill, Jeff. I think there probably shouldn't be this bill, but now that it's out there, now I'm digging into it big time. If you're not an essential business, say you're a restaurant, say half those guys are out of business, and I feel sorry for them. Well, we're not going to give them any money because they're just gone. But if you and I had a restaurant business that somehow or another had an inside location that had five tables and were a pizza place, and all of a sudden our business doubled with the pizzas because we were partially shut down in time. They're going to give us back like our entire amount we spent for our employees, up to like $6,000 a month for the whole year. And yet, because they were partially shut down, even though they're going gangbusters in other areas, where everybody how does anybody downtown not fit the definition of partially shut down? Yet if you're a bank, a brokerage firm, a law firm, by definition, if you were able to do anything for your employees, to your customers, now, I didn't see a customer in a year in this office, did you? I mean, how could you? I mean, and yet, so somewhere along the line, somebody from the restaurant industry is all over this bill. It's like he wrote it.
Sure.
Anyway, I'm looking at this. I mean, I never really read these things in this kind of depth. And I'm like, are they all like this, Jeff? Where you can just tell that somebody somewhere got in somebody's office and paid his way in and damn near wrote the thing. If that wasn't written by the restaurant industry, and again, I feel so, but the thing of it is, Jeff, the people who are out, they're just out. They're not getting any money at all.
That's right.
I mean, it's Is it all like that, or am I just finally waking up at this age?
Well, no, that's, you know, the impact of lobbyists again, which, so you're right, the restaurant industry lobby has been, they've been on this for a while, though. They've been really, really aggressive. I think what we have to find equally disturbing, though, is a report I just saw a couple days ago that said that Google and Amazon are now the two largest single lobbyists in Washington. The two largest thing. So they've replaced pharmaceutical companies and the airlines, which historically were the largest lobbyists. So now it's Google and Amazon. So
I'll ask you a question. If you go back 20 years before 2007, or it might have been before 2000, who were the biggest? And you'd never guess. You would, but not many people would.
Let's see. I don't know. Maybe the defense contractors.
Try Fannie and Freddie.
Fannie and Freddie.
Yeah. Now, how bizarre is that when they're like government companies?
Right.
It's unbelievable.
That's just because they have a lot of money.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I like the part where if you're
spend it somewhere, right.
if you're ComEd, you get to deduct the lobbyist expenses if the Citizens Utility Board fights against them. Can you and I deduct that? I don't think so. Can we? Or can we? Mm. I don't know about that. What's the next Lux Box?
So what's your thought about the tax proposals? I was looking at those. Pretty carefully, actually. Biden's tax is because New York Times attracted my attention with a recent headline saying that that Biden's proposals represent the largest tax increase since 1942. So they are out of the closet with that one. I mean, this is the New York Times is actually calling it the largest federal tax increase since 1942. You can believe it's formidable. And you know, so essentially, looking at the details, if it takes the top federal bracket from 37 to 39.5, right? And then the increased payroll tax, you know, right now that's capped at 142. The 12.5% payroll tax is capped at $142,000. And, of course, Biden said throughout the campaign that he wasn't going to raise taxes on anyone making less than $400,000. But that's completely thrown out, that promise, that call it what you will, but because the new proposal is that the cap on the payroll tax would go from $142,000 to $400,000. So that essentially means that, you know, that 12.4% tax will be paid by everybody from
when you say the payroll tax,
to $400,000 in income. That brings combined federal tax before Medicare to 52% for the top bracket. Throw in Medicare at 3.8, you're at 55.8 as your federal marginal highest tax rate, and 55.8%. That's well over half your income. So what do you think?
I think that they have no concept of the state of their citizenship. Zero. You can't get blood out of a turnip, Jeff. I mean, we're at that stage. To think that somebody paying the current college tuition and stuff, that the family makes $250,000, to think that family's rich is so incredibly naive, I can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your upper middle class, you're not rich. Come on. I mean,
not even counting, you know, capital gains tax increase. That would be material as well.
I would cut out an awful lot of the. There's no way you can tax your way out of this mess. You got to grow your way out of this mess. Now, there are certain things in the tax code that I think we should always have done, Jeff. The idea that I think at the end of the day, everybody should be even. All right. That whatever your taxes are for a subchapter S, they shouldn't be lower than a sole prop, and yet they are. Well, that makes
right.
no sense.
That's right.
I mean, I think the idea that if one of us croaks and we have a kid, and all of a sudden the IBM we bought at $5 goes to the kid at $135, I think that's insane too. I mean, what's the point of that? The capital gains, I think you should index them. What's the idea of the year? The idea of the year. I mean, if the inflation rate is 10% and you buy something for $100 and you sell it for $110, you didn't make any money, right?
Right.
I mean, so we need to, and I also think that we need to get rid of the, and part of what I was talking about earlier, with the size of these corporations is too big. A reason for that is nobody pays any dividends because dividends are double taxed. So if you're gonna charge individuals a rate of 35%, a corporation should pay 35%. And oh, by the way, if they pay a dividend, they should be able to write off the dividend, right? And get the tax break on the dividend, which gets you back, what, 15% on the buck. And then the person who gets the money should pay 35% on the dividend. But the total paid by the unit is 35%. I mean, Warren Buffett's ridiculous firm where he's never paid a dividend would not exist if it wasn't for the tax law the way it is. Because he can always say, if I pay a dividend, everybody's got to pay taxes twice. If I keep the money, you don't. Right? That needs to change. That I think it's caused not only money problems, I think it's caused social problems. I mean, companies are too big. They hang on to money just so they can buy another company. Instead of saying, by the way, why don't we just give it back to our shareholders? That's what they're there for. Those kinds of things. I mean, there's a lot of things that are wrong with the tax code that'll never be fixed. But, I mean, I also think, Jeff, that at some point you got to ask yourself, what is the biggest amount we can get out of people morally? I mean, and I'm thinking that number should be somewhere in the 25 to 40% range. And you're talking about now if somebody, you just mentioned he's up to almost 50 or 60, and his, if the guy lives
that's
in
55.8 without Medicare.
Well, but it's also without state tax, it's without property tax, it's without sales tax.
Yeah.
You could be up to 80, for God's sake.
Sure. Well, that's why Florida has been the beneficiary of so much tax flight.
But when you talk to people, you don't give people. The reason why I pick on the airlines is because one of the young ladies who works in one of the places I go that's still open, I meet some people there, learn some stuff. Reporting, Jeff. You know that is.
Reporting.
She's a flight attendant. She's been paid for the whole year. She hasn't been on a plane in a year.
Really?
I don't begrudge her, but why isn't she just on the regular unemployment like everybody else? Now, and I got to believe that the chairman of United Airlines is getting his full paycheck. You know why? I mean, we should pay for. So I mean, there's people that are making up like a bandit in this deal, and who's going to pay for it? You and me? We don't have the dough. How are we going to make up $1 million salaries they paid people for a year? I mean, you and I are supposed to make that up. From what?
It's our job to pay for the airlines.
Well, somebody better give me a bonus so I can do it. Yeah. What are we doing here? I mean, a lot of this money that is running out with the PPP and a lot of stuff, it makes some sense. But, I mean, why do you, back to Cheryl Atkinson, we're using her name, why aren't people, when we had Powell in front of the Congress, why doesn't somebody ask the question, hey, bump, how can we stop giving reports, which is not a big deal except for somebody like me, but why not say, okay, our president has talked about a $3 trillion infrastructure program. How much of that are you going to print and how much of that is he going to borrow? And the answer is probably 90% print. Now, why can't we at least tell people that? I mean, I don't know what they're going to do about it, but there's this constant fog we're in. What's the point of it? I mean, do we really think we're going to get away with this? That the federal balance sheet's going to be what, $11 trillion a year from now? I mean, or 10-5? I mean, what are we doing? I mean, and they're going to come back and they're going to tax people to that. Yet, meanwhile, the corporations. Did you see the Republican lady on there? Not that she, you know, and she starts spouting out with you can't raise taxes on the rich and corporations because, it really hurts the middle class. Well, corporations are down to what, 7% of the gross that the government gets? Used to be like 16 or 18. They're down to 7. You think that, I'm not saying I want to raise taxes on anybody, but 7, Jeff? I mean, that's a little low, don't you think?
Yeah, for tax revenues, tax revenues.
Yeah, I mean, it's a... Matter of fact, let me give you when's the last time you messed your mind up with going through the numbers? But we'll do it for a second. I'm gonna do a U.S. debt clock here. By the way, when's the new edition coming out? And how do I apply for the expert on extraterrestrial stuff?
Oh, you gotta get that. Have you seen that issue? Just go to getluckbox.com, and of course our digital issues are all free digital subscription to the magazine. The print magazine is a paid subscription, but that's all I get. Luckbox, LUCKBOX.com. The Outer Space and Alien edition is still out right now on newsstands. It's current edition. The next edition that goes to press is in a couple weeks. That's the SPAC edition. So it's all about SPACs, including an interview with the number one SPAC attorney in the country. And right now, our next thing we're working on then will be about Amazon. Hard look at labor practices, anti-competitive practices, and really dig down deep and try to find the good, the bad, and the ugly on Amazon. So, coming up.
Well, just so you know, I'm sure you know this, but I'll make it easy. I don't like you remember. The total federal tax revenue, this is in the last year, was $3.47 trillion. So which comes down to $10,000 per citizen. Income tax revenue is $1.65 trillion. Okay. Payroll tax revenue is $1.3 trillion. So almost, it's a little less, but it's, you know, it's there. Corporate tax, $213 billion. So it's less, well, out of 3.5, what's $213 billion? It's 6.5% maybe?
Sure.
A tariff tax revenue is $67 billion. Thank you, President Trump. So that's kind of where we are. Now, state tax revenue is $2.1 trillion. So it's really, it's more than the income tax revenue. Say it's damn near, I'm going to say 75% of the federal total revenue, but it's definitely more than income tax, which most people would not have guessed. And local tax revenue is $1.5 trillion. So we really have 1, 2, 3, 4 legs to the stool. You know, and whenever you hear somebody talking about taxes and they're talking about income taxes, you know, Jeff, you could look right at him and say, there's a guy who's got money or a lady who's got money, because 80% of the population doesn't even really care about the income taxes. It's all the other stuff that's getting them in the hind end, right? I mean, the payroll tax. I mean, they're at the point now where if you want to deduct anything, now as an individual, you can at least pay cash now, right? Until we don't have any cash. So if somebody comes by and shovels your walk or cuts your grass, you can pay the guy $25 a week out of your own pocket. I mean, of course you're not supposed to, but if you do, and then a snowstorm comes, you give another $25. Not to know anybody who does this. So say at the end of the year, you pay to do $700. Well, if it's luck box and you want to write it off, you better give this guy a 1099, or you're not gonna be able to write it off. And they're immediately gonna go for him and want, if it's $600, they're gonna want $90. Because the idea that there's a minimum on how much you have to pay taxes, they want their 15% on the payroll taxes instantly. Right? I mean, it's scary. Yet Amazon, what do they pay? 5% or something? They're gonna want more out of the guy shoveling your walk, for God's sake. It's pretty, Jeff. Thank you, bud. Next week, let's talk more about the new magazine. Have a happy Easter, and
you do the same.
S&P futures
right.
down
Stay
13.
Safe. Let's see. Talk soon.
Yep. S&P futures down 13. NASDAQ futures down 85. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
You take drugs, Danny?
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.